Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this Saturday morning, August the 21st. I've had a bit of a different morning. I had my phone worked on about a week ago, and my cord wouldn't extend all the way to my office desk like it usually does. So I'm like at the very, very last minute getting off the shelf, off the ground this morning. But I thank you for joining us, and it's such a joy to have you with us and our very special guest who's here this morning that I only got to talk to for a few seconds. For those of you who are tuning in to Off the Shelf for the first time, I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I can't say it enough. I truly thank you and appreciate your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is my latest book, and it's a powerfully moving, inspirational story that you need to add to your book collection. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistell.com, and you can read free excerpts and get a little taste of the book before you decide to make your purchase. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc., and if you don't see it on the bookstore shelves, just ask the clerk for it. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest that I'm excited to talk to after this bundled, hurry start to my morning here today. And our special guest is also a host of the radio show Conscious Living, which is available right here on Blog Talk Radio as well. She is a blogger, a writer, a wife, and a musical artist. She has such a broad spectrum of creative talents and abilities. And this marvelous woman is the one and only Lillian Brummett. Lillian is online at www.brummett.ca. Again, that's www.brummett.ca. And when you go over to her website, and hopefully you'll go over there now so you can enjoy her website while you listen to her on this interview today, but you'll find there information about her books and her other works that she and her husband are involved in. We're so happy to have her with us this morning on Off the Shelf, and welcome to the show this morning, Lillian.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure being here with you.
It's so good to connect with you. Our paths crossed several years ago. I think I came across your website, you and your husband's website, several years ago. And just the spirit there and the energy there, I said, it's just something about you that stood out to me. And I so enjoyed your website. And then I think I signed up for your newsletter. And that's how I started becoming, you know, more regularly connected to you. So I'm so happy to finally speak to you for the first time here on Off the Shelf. You have so many passions. And you seem to have a deep passion for everything that you do, which I think is truly a blessing. And from the very start, I've admired that about you. I wanted to ask you, which of your current passions, Lillian, gardening, music, writing, did you realize first? Which one did you realize that you love that came to you first? Was it music? Was it writing or something else that you love to do?
Well, you know, it probably started with gardening. Writing was something that I've always done. I've done it as a passion, as a healing tool, as a way of expressing myself since I was very young. But I don't think I discovered the passion for it until much later in life, whereas gardening is something that I really fell into. It seemed to pique my natural-born interest and love for life and watching it grow and being fascinated that this little tiny seed can somehow convert what's in that soil and turn into this beautiful plant above ground and produce food. It's just, it's such a wonderful thing to witness and be a part of, you know, knowing that you help that grow was really cool, I guess. And so that's where I really started. Gardening was also a passion of my mother's. So it was a way that we were able to bond as well. After being apart for so long, we were able to use this mutual passion to develop our relationship. So it was a bonus in so many ways.
Wow, that's so interesting. Were you a little girl? Because I don't imagine that most little girls. I'm listening to you talk about how you appreciate the fact that we play a part in helping, you know, nature, a flower, a tree, that we plant a bush, or fruit, a fruit plant to grow. I've not generally heard people speak of it that way. They usually just speak of watching something from nature grow, like you plant it and you just wait for it to do what it does. But to hear you actually appreciate how you are a co-creator in that process is fascinating. I'm just curious for myself. Were you a little girl when you enjoyed gardening? Because most times I don't find little kids really enjoy gardening.
Well, you know, when I was growing up, we were quite poor, and so my mom always had a little tiny patch of a garden, you know, whether it was in a little tiny trailer park, a postage stamp size yard that you're given, or whether it was a larger farm, depending on where we lived at one point or another. So she always had a little tiny garden going, and she was very much into doing research. She loved going to libraries and finding out about gardening and growing that skill, and it was through her that that my own skills developed. When my mom and I started getting back together again, like we kind of came from a broken family, and I was on my own when I was a young preteen. So when we started becoming friends again later on and hanging out again, this was a beautiful timing for this, because it was a passion that was growing for me. It was one that she's always had, and she's developed those skills over all those years. So I got the benefit of gleaning, you know, from her tried and true methods and learning those without having to put all those years in. So it was really great to benefit from that.
You know, I'm listening to you, and you are, to me, an amazing woman. I'm not certain how you see yourself, but I talk to so many people, and when you hear a person's more of their story, like when you talk about how you and your mom came together after some years of being apart, I would never have suspected that about you. And I was interviewing a woman who was orphaned. Her mother passed when she was 6 months and her father when she was 6 years old. And if you just knew her, you would never think that. So I think it's important that we get to know each other and listen to and share our stories. They're encouraging to us, and also we can see how, as we continue to move and journey forward, how our lives can change and even improve, irregardless of where we started from. I know you also started as a freelance writer, both you and your husband, and I wanted to ask you, because many of our listeners here at Off the Shelf have a passion or want to become a published author. And for some people, that just remains a dream. They never act on it, as with other dreams they might have. Others are acting on it, but it's not materializing maybe the way they would hope that it would. I wanted to ask you, just to touch on that a little bit, have you always, like, paid your bills being a freelance writer? A lot of writers have another job on the side, and then they also write. So that's the reason I'm asking that for our listeners here who are hoping to earn a career, a full-time career as a writer. So have you always been a full-time writer?
Yes, out of necessity. I was involved in an accident, Denise, that it basically took my career away. I had built up a business, and I could no longer do that type of work due to the car accident that I was in. And so it really changed how I was feeling about life, where I was focusing my energies in life. Dave, too, was very dissatisfied with, you know, working the day job, working for the man. And we just really wanted to change our life. We didn't want to plod away and live in misery. We watched our parents do it, you know, struggling to conform to society, paying their bills, taking care of the kids, wearing their bodies away down to nothing, you know, spending their retirement years in pain and misery, and what for? You know, we just didn't want to live that life. We wanted to have a different life. And so we kind of started pursuing writing because it was something that we both really enjoyed doing, and it was a talent that we both shared. My husband started taking a course, a writing course, and at this time, this exact time when we were going through this, what are we going to do with our lives? What kind of legacy are we going to be leaving behind? He was taking this course. So it just sort of fell into place, eh? And so I started taking the course along with him, kind of like a ghost co-student sort of thing in the background, doing the lessons along with him. And one of the things that they taught us to do was how to query magazines, how to begin, you know, the business process. The writing process is really in you. You know, if we're taught from elementary, we know how to do an outline. We know a beginning, middle, end story. We know the basics of writing. Developing and fine-tuning your talent is one thing, but the business aspect of being a writer. So that's what this course taught us, was the behind-the-scenes business aspects. And that got us going as professionals. And I think that really helped us stand out among a huge crowd of writers out there. When we queried someone, we knew their product, we knew their staff, we knew what to say to them. We came across as professionals. We used the right wording. We presented ourselves as fellow professionals, not someone that they're going to have to, like, pay staff to clean up after, you know. If they're going to, you know, it's very much a partnership. You have to show them that working with you is going to be profitable for them and easy for them, that they're not going to have to edit for you and do all this work for you. So it's all about how you present yourself. And just starting out that way helped us get to where we are now. As to financially, you know, it comes and goes. Coming from being a self-employed person in the past, running businesses in the past, it's totally different from running a normal business, whether you're in the service industry or a product industry. And the reason is because the world of writing is a very up and down world. Sometimes the topic is hot, sometimes it's not. Sometimes people are really into hearing about it. Sometimes they've been inundated with that information and they don't want to hear it. Sometimes you've already saturated a certain market and now you have to find another market to start, approaching. And so it's this constant development stage and finding a new group of people to start marketing yourself or marketing your work to. And so there's ebbs and flows. Sometimes it's a lot of, you know, you're doing pretty good. Sometimes you have, like, hardly anything come in, and I mean hardly anything. So to make ends meet, my husband still works a quote-unquote day job. I say that because it's actually shift work, so he works sometimes nights, sometimes afternoons, you know. But he does have this steady job that does make the difference. We don't both have to work outside of the home, luckily. We are able to make enough from the office to warrant me being at home full time. So it has worked out for us both physically and economically so far. But without Dave having that full time job, we would have been having some periods of very dire straits. So of course we don't want to live that way. So, you know, our bills must be paid. So he does have that day job to get us through that. However, we are working on constantly developing and maximizing and producing more. And we do have intention at some point to getting to the level where he doesn't have to work outside the home, or maybe he could work a part-time job or something and work more in the home, because we desperately need him here. The more hours that he comes into the office and is able to put in here, the more we can put out, you know. So it's sort of a catch-22.
And you are sharing so much for our listeners here at Off the Shelf. You're sharing so much about your own personal experience, and I appreciate that. And you went into great detail on how you learned about query letters, because that's for a writer, a freelance writer I'm talking, not so much a novelist or a nonfiction book writer, but even in that area as well. In those, they really kind of want you to go through a literary agent. But if you're querying, like, magazines and other, even the companies, you want to do copyright for them, or be a copy editor or what have you, that letter that you send them, oh my goodness, a lot of times that's what you get hired off of, simply off of that query letter is what's going to get that phone call for you. That first job that you had as a freelance writer, what was that first job, your very first freelance writing? You must have been very excited when you landed your first client. But what was that first freelance writing job that you
Oh, wow, that's a good question. We're talking, like, almost 12 years ago. I can't remember the very first published article, honestly, but I do remember the feeling of being accepted. It was extremely exciting and extremely intimidating at the same time, Denise. I was really worried that I wasn't going to stand up to the level of performance that I wanted to see. I was very nervous, you know, the first communications with the editors and all of that. It was such a big deal. Now it's old hat. Oh, you know, another person wants to interview us, and oh, and, you know, it's no big deal. But when it first started happening, oh my gosh, everything was new and everything was so exciting and stressful and wonderful all at once. Yeah, it was a lot of emotions to go through. And eventually, as you become more accustomed to getting acceptance, you know, letters, whether it's from a publisher or from a magazine editor or any other, you know, medium that you're working with, then it just, you know, you just, it's still exciting. And it's very heartwarming, and it's very encouraging, and it always brings a smile to your face. And sometimes you still get the nerves, like even for a show like today, a little bit nervous before the show. And I've done, you know, maybe hundreds or maybe even thousands of interviews by now, but I really, you know, I really enjoy the process, the personal development process, and the emotional process too. It brings a lot of joy. Unlike other careers, you know, you sell another widget, big deal. You know, it's right. Doesn't give you that thrill. But if you sold another book, or if you had another interview, or an article was published, it gives you that thrill. So it's a completely different career. Yeah.
I want to talk about your books. Before that, I just wanted one more question for our off-the-shelf listeners.
Sure.
There are a lot of, and this is in all industries, but there are a lot of literary agents and people. I actually saw something on AOL before this call, which didn't prompt me to ask this question. I was already going to ask it. But in my search looking for freelance writing job opportunities, which I encourage anybody who freelance writes to do that, if not every day, at least a couple of times a week, just continuous. But I early in my search, I would see jobs. They would say some of them even they wanted somebody with a bachelor's degree. You had all the 5 to 7 years of experience in maybe a legal field or human resources or technology, and then they would tell you they're going to pay you $5 an article. And it's like, what? They're people who actually work. What would you say to an off the shelf listener who's new? And you, when I first came on the internet, I used to hear things like, "We don't have the money to pay you. We're a startup company or a startup website, but you'll get a lot of exposure. We'll let you put your byline with your article." What advice would you give to people who are seeking to become a full time writer and they're working for article companies that pay them anywhere from $2 to $5 an article or nothing, and they're promising them just all this exposure?
Well, you know, normally in other aspects in life, I would say start how you mean to continue. But in a writing career, especially when you're first starting out, sometimes you have to do things for free or for very little. And the reason why is because you're building name recognition. You're building your repertoire, your resume, so to speak, so that when you do query the larger magazines, you know, Explore, National Geographic, what have you, you can actually say, okay, well, I am a published author. Here are what they used to call tear sheets, T-E-A-R sheets, which is basically just a photocopy or a scanned image of your published work, which includes usually along the top you have the name of the magazine, the date that it was published. It's an actual scan of the published piece, so you'd see the magazine date, the magazine issue number, all that is printed on the bottom like they normally would, and that proves to the editor when they're looking at your work or the acquisition person that you have, that other people have taken a risk on you and other people have worked with you, and that gives you some credibility. So when you're first starting out, you do need to build up a resume. You can start with your local publications like your newspapers, local tourist magazines, newsletters, places like this. This is a really good place to start in your local area and start branching out from there. But it is true, Denise, and I still come across this regularly, that it is true that there there seems to be, I don't know, this perception that being a writer is very, very easy to do, and
mm-hmm.
that people can get paid very, very little or nothing
yes.
for their work, and that's okay. Well, it's not okay. It's like asking your lawyer or your doctor to give you a free, you know, session. Well, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have that session for free? Well, you know, they're going to look at you and say, you're crazy, right?
Yes.
Well, in the writing world, for some reason, people can sometimes get away with it. And I'm not sure why
mm-hmm.
that is, but there is that perception. So it's important. It is important at a certain point, like when you feel that you've got your resume and you're ready to move on to, you know, you feel accomplished in your particular genre and topic, you're ready to start querying larger and larger magazines or publishers. That is when you're going to be wanting to say, okay, I want certain amount of money. The best place to go is online and start looking at what other writers are charging. Writers are very friendly, and you can get into writers' forums and just start asking them questions about
mm-hmm.
what you should be charging. Don't ask them what they're earning, because that's kind of, you know, that's almost impolite. But you ask them what is a reasonable charge for such and such
mm-hmm.
a type of project, and that will start giving you an idea as what you should be earning in your caliber, because you have to realize that as a beginner, you're a beginner. You're not a big name. You're not someone who's going to draw a lot of readers to their publication or to their, you know, to their publishing company. So until you get to that point, you sort of work your way up, I guess, the pay scale.
Yeah, no, and such excellent advice. As a new beginner, yes. But I think a byline should just come automatic. But you can do that until you build an audience. But I wouldn't recommend doing it for long. I would tell somebody maybe definitely no more than a couple of months to a year. And at that point, you should have enough built up in your portfolio that you can now start charging. You're earning a living, so it's like no other profession. Even if other people don't see it that way, you see it as an
mm-hmm.
art, and you should just do it for free because you just love to do it, but you still got bills to pay, so you
mm-hmm.
need to earn a living at it
That's
as well.
Right.
I
right.
talk
you know,
about
the only... Oh, I'm
go
sorry,
ahead.
Denise. I was just going to say that the only exception to that rule is when you're doing a promotional piece. So say, for instance, I'm writing an article for free to a publication, but I'm writing it because I'm actually targeting, I'm driving traffic to my website for a particular project, or I'm trying to draw attention to my book. So instead of paying an ad, which I may not have the budget for, I can probably produce an article instead, and that works as an ad. It draws people to my website if it's, or, you know, to the product or whatever that I'm trying to do. So there are times when you do want to write them for free as part of your marketing plan, but not as part of your profession.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And writing articles is a great way to build traffic. One of your books is titled Trash Talk. Can you tell our listeners when you wrote Trash Talk and what the book is about and why the topic is relevant today?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Trash Talk actually started out going back to that writing course. One of the things that we were assigned was to create a article series. And I came up with Trash Talk because I really had a passion for it. The idea actually came from the career that I had before. Some of the clientele that I were working with were showing me through their lifestyle how society was seeing waste. They weren't seeing it as a resource. They were seeing it as this icky, gicky thing that they had to throw away, get rid of as quick as possible. And it didn't matter if it was a returnable bottle or a recyclable newspaper. It was all considered one thing, icky, gicky garbage. And I wanted to change that perception, the perception of buying used, the perception of taking your bottles into the bottle depot. It doesn't matter what your financial disposition is. It's a matter of personal legacy, what you're, you know, the impact that you're leaving behind, the fact that you can be, you know, participating in this whole cycle rather than someone who's making it worse. So, you know, I decided that this topic really needed to get out there to show the real impact of recycling that tin can or changing that tin can into a reusable item, something that you and your family can enjoy, maybe a craft item or something or what, you know. And so we started listing all of these different reuse ways, and the article got picked up, like, immediately. And then it became a column. And eventually, and it was locally published, and then eventually another publication, and then another, and eventually
okay.
over the years, it became an international column that was published. And after about 4 years of that, we decided to put that into a book format, basically because when you're writing articles, you're being assigned something. A publication might say, okay, we want a biweekly column article, but we only want 250 words. Mm-hmm. So that's it. You're limited to 250 words. And your topic might actually, you could go on and on and on about that topic, but you can't in this particular publication. So we were seeing that there was so much information that we weren't able to share in these, you know, 250, 300, 500, 750 word articles that on average, that we decided, you know, really needed to put this book out there. And right when we put the book out there was when this zero waste initiative was really catching on. I mean, it had been around for a while, but it was really starting to catch on. And so the book and the timing of it was just perfectly. The column itself
wow.
ran until 2007, I believe it was
wow.
when I stopped writing the column. But when the book was published, I started writing the column not for money, but for promotional purposes, to promote mm-hmm. the book, to promote the concept. And that way it became very helpful because our advertising budget was very, very low, being brand new authors. And so we had to find, very frugal ways of getting our the idea, the concept out there for people to start considering.
Okay. You are definitely, I can tell you said you were self-employed before, and it comes through your entrepreneurial. What can each of us do, Lillian, to help restore the environment? There's a big focus on that, as you mentioned earlier. Now, you know, we hear a lot about being and going green. But years ago, as you alluded to, that was not the case. We just threw things away, and then recycling started, and then there was more of a push toward going green. What can each of us do in our own daily lives with, like, simple things to help restore the environment?
You know, there are two major things that we can do right now. They're very simple things, but they have a major impact on the environment. The number one thing is to participate in the recycling system in your region and to encourage that system to increase the items that they're accepting. There are several ways to do this, and I know we are very limited on time here, but the number one way is to look up online your local city waste management website. Find out exactly what's being accepted in your region and participate with each of those items. It's so very important. You can reduce your waste, the amount of waste that you're putting on the curb, for instance, or in that black bag. Just by recycling alone, you can reduce your waste by anywhere between 30 and 60%.
Wow.
Right there, how much you're sending to the landfill. Now, we all know how expensive landfills are and how quickly they're filling up and how limited open land space is and how much agriculture and wildlife and landfills are fighting for the same land as well as resource, you know, extraction things and so forth. And they're all after the same land. So how can we help? We can help by participating in the recycling industry. Now, our book shows you many, many ways of helping it run more efficiently, how to participate, how to, contact people in the industry and help it run. But the second thing that you can do is keep organics out of the landfill. And this involves, this involves composting. Now, many, many communities have composting systems available that, you know, pickup systems, green bins or gray bins, they're often called. These are often pickup systems on the curb, very much like your recycling or your black bags for most larger communities. Smaller cities and smaller communities may not have this system available, but they can do it in their own. Apartment dwellers, condo dwellers, there are systems available for you. Go online, do some research. You will find that there are all kinds of composting systems that are odorless, pestless, that you can do indoors. It doesn't, you don't have to have the physical ability to turn a pile or, you know, any of that. So there are things that we can do that immediately make a difference. Reducing your compost organics out of your garbage, out of your black bag, can again reduce your waste by 30%. So between
wow.
those two things, you can reduce at least 60%, and as much as 90% of your waste can be reduced immediately by doing those
wow.
two things. And people don't realize that, and there's so many people, like right here in our own city, when I'm walking my dogs and stuff, I'll see them put out their bags way before they're supposed to. And unfortunately, you know, we live in a city that's very bordered by wildness, and so we still have, you know, animals coming into this city. And unfortunately,
man.
The bags get ripped, you know, when
yeah.
they put them out, like, a couple days before they're supposed to. And unfortunately, you can see what's in the garbage, and there's all
yeah.
kinds of recyclables and returnable bottles and all these things. You can make such a difference with your returnable bottles. If you're wealthy enough that you don't need the change that you get, the pocket change from the bottles and cans and so forth, please don't put them in your bin, or I mean in your black bag. Take them down to the recycling depot and give them to them. What they have there are locally in our bottle returnable depot, they have several donation boxes, so you can just say, take my bottles and give it to the SPCA, or take my bottles and give it to the Boys and Girls Club, or whatever.
Ah.
They have those boxes right there, so you don't even have to handle the bottles. You just drop it off, tell the staff, go ahead, donate it to that place, or whoever needs it the most, and leave. You know, so if you don't need the pocket change, a lot of people could use it.
This is another benefit, just two of the few benefits, and I'm glad I asked you that question, so our listeners here at Off the Shelf can just get a glimpse of some of the benefits you will receive if you when you order and read Trash Talk, which is, I'm going to give you Lily and Dave Brummett's website again. It's www.brummm, and the M is like in mother, brummet.ca. Again, that's www.brummet.ca. And we're talking to Lillian Brummett, and she is a co-author with her husband. Those are just two things I have never even heard before. I knew about recycling, the importance of that, I'd never even heard of that. So those are just two benefits you'll get when you read her book, Trash Talk, to learn how you can help restore the environment so that not only yourself but your grandchildren and the next generations from your family will benefit from it. And a lot of the information, again, is in Lillian and Dave Brummett's book, Trash Talk. I also love the title of your book, Towards Understanding. And I wanted to ask you, when did you write – it was a book of poetry. When did you write this book of poetry, and what inspired you, Lillian, to write Towards Understanding?
Well, you know, the poetry actually started years and years ago. It's a collection of poetry from, I think, ranging from when I was 17 or 18 up until I was about 25 or 28, somewhere around there. And that's the time period that's in that book. But I started writing poetry way back when I was going through the trauma of an earlier life of my childhood. And what I would do is I would pour out my feelings on the paper. And I would just, you know, I would rip into the paper, and I would pour out all my hate and anger and shame and everything that was going on that was in my mind as a child, as a youth. And I would tear them up, and I would throw them away, or I would burn them, usually because I didn't want other people to see them. And as it turns out, which I didn't realize at the time, and I've mentioned this in a recent interview, as it turns out, later on in life, I learned that was actually a therapy tool, is to get their clients to
yeah.
write out their feelings and then burn that paper, because nobody has to see it. And it's a release. It's like you burn it up with the smoke. The North American Indians do a similar thing as well. They're burning up in the smoke of their ceremonies for emotional healing. And it's something about the releasing of it. I'm not sure what it is, but it's very healing. So I was doing that just on my own. And eventually I started keeping them. And I stumbled across them once in a while. Oh, here's this crumpled up piece of paper. What's this? And reading it, you know. Eventually I had a shoebox and then a big box. And once in a while a friend would stumble on them, you know, because I wasn't confident enough to say, oh, look at how great my writing is. Check this out. It wasn't that kind of thing. It was just, to me, that was emotions being poured on the paper more than being published. And so friends would stumble upon it once in a while, and they would say, hey, this is really good. You should enter this contest that I learned about, or you should. So I started doing that eventually. I started entering contests, and that's when I started thinking, well, after I won a few awards and recognitions and all, you know, from some publications took them on, is that I thought, well, maybe there's something in this, in this writing thing. You know, that's when it really started sparking the whole idea of maybe there's something in this writing. But it was after we published, Dave and I are co-writers, and we published Trash Talk together, and it was after that was released that I said, you know, Dave, I think I'd really like to release this book. He said, are you sure? You know, it's pretty private and pretty, you know, emotional. And you sure you want to do this? You're putting your you know, self out there. And I was like, yeah, I think I really want to do this. I think it'll make a difference to people. You know, maybe it'll help them get over, see that there is a way to get over these kinds of things. They don't have to live with this disease, this, you know, fish hook in their wound. They can take that fish hook out and heal themselves, you know. And I thought maybe, you know, it would help some people. So we decided to put it together. Of course, the cover, as always, was designed by my husband, and he helped me edit it and put it together. And we released that in chronological format because I wanted to show the real journey from month to month, from year to year, what I was going through and the emotions that I was going through, learning how to grow into myself and fit into society and understand society and my family and other families too, because I was quite an observer, not very much a social person, but very much watching and observing. And so all of that is in there, that whole journey of me going through the healing process. You won't, when you read the book, you're not going to hear about, oh, you know, she was abused and this and that happened and oh, poor her. It's not that. It's the healing process that you're going to be following me on in that journey.
Well, and I so appreciate that. I think for myself, when I either read a book or hear, in a conversation with somebody else, and generally when we go through things that are difficult, and it's the emotions and the thoughts attached to things that really make, I think that's where a lot of the pain comes from, because everybody has different experiences, but they can have the same level of pain. So I think it's how we process it and our thoughts and emotions that are attached to those experiences. But as you listen to other people and you see where they are now and they tell you where they came from, for those who are there yet, they can know that there is a great amount of hope and a tremendous possibility, limitless, that they too can move out of that and move forward. Like you said, take that fish hook out of the mouth. So I thank you for sharing that, because I know people that you probably will never meet or hear from will actually get that release through the work that you've shared. So I thank you for that, for myself and for them. Before we talk about your third book, I wanted to talk a little bit, in your newsletter, I wanted to talk a little bit about, ask you a question. Have you ever thought about writing a novel? When I was preparing this work for the interview, I don't know why that popped into my head. Have you ever thought about writing a novel? For some reason, I don't know, I saw you as a novelist as well. Has that been something that's ever crossed your mind?
Well, yes, it has, although it's completely out of my comfort zone. I have written some short stories that haven't been published yet. I'm still working on them years later as time allows, and I have a moment where something strikes me about the story, I'll return to it and work on it. Such is the life of a writer. You know, often you'll have a piece that might sit there for 8 years before it's perfect enough, you know. but yes, I am also working on the idea of a a memoir, possibly turned into a novel. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with that there. But right now I'm concentrating, Dave and I are concentrating on releasing our e-books. We have all three of our books now are coming out in revised e-book format, and we're working on getting the distributorship and all of that all completed for the end of August. So we'll have all the e-commerce and all of that set up on our site. Yeah, it's all Dave. You know, he's the guy who's doing all the technical stuff in the background. So that he's busy, you know, chugging away with that right now. He hopes to have it available towards the end of August, but possibly the beginning of September, we'll have our site completely revised. So the people will go there, they'll see a lot there now, but at the end of the month or beginning of September, go there again, because there's going to be a lot of other stuff and new stuff.
Yeah, go and bookmark the site. It's brummet.ca. Again, it's www.brummet.ca, where you can get the book where she gave the two very, very good tips on how each of us can do just a small thing to help restore the environment in her book, Trash Talk, and her book of poetry that she, Ilian just spoke about, Towards Understanding. We're going to talk about her third book next and her newsletter, but they're going to put them in ebook format, which means you can order them and get them probably in the same day. That'll be either late this month or early September when they revamp the website. I wanted to ask you, how long has your newsletter, Brummet's Moves, how long has that been around?
That's only been around for a couple of years. You know, before that, I had an email system that I had just used my regular inbox, and I would just send out, you know, notices to people. And I found that that was really time-consuming, and it was quite a while before I endeavored upon email services. I was looking at several different ones. I think there was three or four that I had decided that I was going to really seriously consider, and I ended up going, like, there's AWeber and there's Constant Contact and there's, oh gosh, I can't remember the other two, but I ended up going with Constant Contact, and because it just seemed so simple and it was mm-hmm. more frugal, and that's the one I chose to go with. And so this makes it so much easier because people can automatically sign up to the newsletter. I don't have to physically manage who gets it. And then I put it together around the 1st and the 15th of every month. So it goes out either the 30th or the 1st or the 15th and the 16th, right around those two dates. Every 2 weeks it goes out. And what it does is it describes what's going on our radio shows and what's going on in the media as far as where Dave and I are appearing. And it offers tips and resources and quotes and those kinds of things as well.
How can our off-the-shelf listeners, I know you said through Constant Contact and I work with them as well, but how can they subscribe mm-hmm. to Brummet's Muse? How can they? Because I love the quotes that you use at the top of your newsletter.
Oh, thank you.
I always see, it's just so encouraging, your quotes. They're very powerful. But how can our off-the-shelf listeners subscribe to Brummet's Muse?
Oh, you know, it's really easy. They can just go to brummet.ca, or they go to our blog at consciousdiscussions.blogspot.com, and they can find it on our radio show as well. Conscious Discussions is on blogtalkradio.com/consciousdiscussions. Now, they go to either of those sites, they'll see a widget there, a little purple widget, I think it is, if memory serves, and it says sign up for our newsletter, and all you do is you just stick your email in there.
Okay, that's very, very simple. And then the Constant Contact, I do like their service, so that's mm-hmm. easy enough. Do you ever feature other artists in Brummet's Muse? Because if any of our listeners were interested in doing like an interview in your newsletter, do you ever do anything like that, or are you considering doing that in the future?
Well, you know, not in the newsletter itself, but I do on the blog. And so the newsletter will announce guests on my blog or on one of my radio shows. So what I like to do on the blog, I absolutely love doing mini World of Writing interviews. So they're very encouraging, motivational, small interviews, usually about 6 to 7 questions, real brief, and it gives an insight into that author's world when it comes to, you know, their office or, you know, how they're doing their marketing or, you know, how a writer can make a difference in the world. I've had several people come on talking about, you know, getting involved in literacy or looking at greening the publishing world and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I also have people come in to do guest blog posts, which means they do mini, like it's like a mini article that they submit to me. And it's, again, about the world of writing usually or making a difference as a writer. And so they'll submit that article to me, usually about 250 words or so, but I've done larger ones. And I also feature poets on the program, which is really cool. You know, I think it was June, which was buy a poetry book for your lover or significant other month. That's what it was. Buy a poetry book for your significant other. I loved that, and I started participating in that among many other groups and organizations. And what I did that month was I had poets come in to share an excerpt of their published poetry on the blog. So every 3-4 days we had a new poet come on there. So you can find those very easily. Just scroll through the archives there of the blog, and you can go back months and months and check out all of those.
I am absolutely loving this interview with you. Oh, my goodness. I've done so many interviews over nearly 6 years. I feel so at home with you. I'm absolutely loving it. We are actually speaking with Lillian Brummett, and she is does so many things. She's an entrepreneur, owned her own businesses. She's now a writer, musical artist, loves the garden, environmentally conscious, and some of the books that she and her husband have written. And I love the 2 tips she shared with her book that's going to come out as an e-book either late August or early September, Trash Talk, and then her book of poetry, Towards Understanding. And we're going to talk about her 3rd book next. And you can also subscribe to Dave and Lillian's newsletter, Brummett's Muse. And they have the quote at the top is wonderful, and you can learn about what's going on their radio show, Conscious Living, which is right here at Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to her now and tell she is an awesome, awesome host and somebody who just shares so much and offers her listeners so many things. You can go online and visit Lillian Brummett and Dave at www.brummett.ca. They're revamping their website, and their books will all be available in ebook form, which means you can get them a lot quicker the end of August, early September. Just those 2 tips for Trash Talk. I would definitely go get that book. Now I want to talk about your 3rd book, which is this your latest book, The Purple Snowflake Marketing? Is that your latest?
Yes, it is. Yes. This is something that I'm very, very proud to have out there. You know, it first started with, you know, just our own career. Purple Snowflake Marketing is our marketing plan for every book or article that we write. It's exactly what we do in our career, our step-by-step guide for ourselves. And basically it started out with me, you know, 12 years ago, starting out as a newbie in the industry, learning from every resource that I could. I went to every writer's newsletter that I could find. I signed up for so many. I went to so many different writers' groups and organizations. I signed up and joined forums, discussions, listened to interviews, read writers' books, you know, writers' how-to books, just glean every resource that I could possibly get my hands on for years. And all of that information, plus everything I learn every day, goes into that ebook project. Therefore, it's updated every 2 years or so.
Wow.
It was originally produced in 2007. It was updated in a second edition, revised edition in 2009, about mid to late summer 2009, I believe it was. So the next one won't be, you know, coming out till probably 2012 or so. So this one has so much in it, this particular edition. It has more than 900 resources in the appendix section for writers to just go to and click on them. Now, these aren't just willy-nilly resources. These are resources that we have tried and true, we enjoy, we continue to use. We've learned from them or networked from them or had some kind of marketing opportunity through them, every single one of those resources that are in the appendix session. And those are just the appendix sections. You know, like there are like 19 chapters in this book, and it walks you through every process of your book writing world. Like, we'll show you behind the scenes how to keep records, how to do follow-ups, how to, virtually everything, how to handle your taxes, how to deal with your family and friends, how to deal with people who want free books, how to deal with... Oh yes, that's a tough one, isn't it?
And you, the taxes and everything, you keep keeping writers out of trouble. You are covering the whole gamut. I'm glad that they're going to be available in ebook. I'm not a big ebook person, but I'm glad they're available in ebook. I made a mental note to go over and get some of your books. You said late August, early September when the website will be revamped.
They can actually get Purple now. Purple Snowflake Marketing is available now in that ebook format, and it's available just by clicking that button on our website. It'll take you to one of our favorite distributors of the ebook, so you can get it right away, and it downloads within seconds or minutes depending on your system, so you'll have it immediately in your hands.
Okay. Why is it important, Lillian? I know you said this is something I think you and your husband took I don't know if I want to say a wiser approach. Each of us learns in our own unique and different way, but you started from more the business aspect. I hear the businesswoman in you, the entrepreneur in you. You're a very loving, gentle spirit. That's the way you're coming across to me, but that businesswoman's in there strong as well, which I think is good. You and your husband approached the writing from that, whereas a lot of writers approach it more from almost a fantasy state, and I've interviewed best-selling novelists on here, and we get together and laugh about how even ourselves, we fantasize that we'd write this one book, and it would be the greatest book selling, and we'd be billionaires living the high life. We laugh about that, but that's even a lot of freelance writers, they approach it that way and not from a business aspect. So that said, why do you think it's important, Lillian, that writers take these concrete marketing steps that you also mentioned in Purple Snowflake Marketing, which is available now in ebook format at your website? But why is it important that we take these steps in order to grow and expand our audience and our reader base?
Well,
dream about it.
Well, you know, it's just like the music industry or the movie industry or the screenwriting industry. When you release a product, it's your child, it's your joy, it's your love, it's your passion, typically, unless you've been assigned the project. There are two different types of writing, actually three different types of writing. There's business writing, which is often called copy, and that is to sell something. You're developing a website to sell something. You're developing an article to sell a product. That's one type of writing. There's another type of writing that is more along the lines of business, which is more typically you're producing a product for sale because someone told you they want that product for sale. So a publisher of a magazine would contact me and they would say, I need an article about alternative agriculture. I want it specifically about this type of boar. I want to know this, and this, and I want to have it done by January 15th, and it has to be 1,501 words, no more, no less, and I want three pictures. Thank you very much. You know, and so that is an assignment. So it's not a choice. You're not saying, oh, I really... really love this topic, and I really, yeah. really, really want to learn a lot about pigs, you know. That
right.
isn't, you know, whereas, you know, then you have your creative writing, and that, it can be how-to, but it is your passion. You've decided that this is something that you want to do. Nobody's assigned it to you. That is where it can become very, very difficult to become a business individual, because as you say, it's your baby, it's your love, it's your art. And like artists or musicians and other, you can't, you can't help but hope that the public is going to embrace it, that you can't help but hope that maybe this one is going to be the one that's going to make your life a little bit easier, especially financially. You know, because it's very, very hard as a writer. People don't understand what it takes to for a book, to sell one book. It might take, you know, several hours of marketing just to get one book sale, you know, hopefully. And that can be, you know, really, really hard for a writer, you know, to accept the business aspect of it. So as a creative writer, it's great. That's fantastic. It's wonderful that it's your passion. I enjoy that. I applaud it. I celebrate it. But getting it out there to the public, now you got to look at it as a business.
Yes, yes. And every writer I've talked to, and again, I'm going back to New York Times bestselling authors, they tell me, you know, you've written a book and that is work. You had the book edited, that is work. You've got a publisher for a book, that does take work. But now your work really starts. You've got to market that book and get it off the shelves, get it out of your house if you self-published it. You've got to get folks interested enough to start to make a purchase, and that's where the real work comes in. So the business aspect that you have, that really, really benefits a person as an author. I know you talk about authors avoiding marketing pitfalls in Purple Snowflake Marketing. Now, I got to get a copy of that book. But what are some of the common missteps that you've noticed writers take?
Well, I realize that we only have a few moments left, so the one thing that I would like to mention is to avoid the honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a term that's used in the industry. I'm sure you've heard it, Denise. And this is a term that's used to describe the first year after a book has been released. Not the promotions before the book has been released and all the work that goes into that, but after it's been released and available through your distributors. It's actually purchasable online and all these other places. From that date until a year later, that is called the honeymoon period. And what that refers to is the energy that an author will put into that book. Typically is only for the first year, the honeymoon period. Their contacts have been contacted. They've worn themselves out. They don't know what else to do for their marketing. They've contacted everyone they know. They've already touched base with the local bookstores or whatever, and now they're sort of going, what next? They're kind of lost and floundering and don't know what to do. Usually that happens at the end of that 1 year period, and sometimes less if you're unlucky. What a lot of people don't understand is that your marketing plan for a book must last for the life of the contract of the book, and sometimes even farther. Like in our case, we're doing new editions, right? So the contract isn't just 4 years or 7 years. It's now 10 or 20 years. So what is our marketing plan going to be for that length of time? So you have to pace yourself out. Now, we talk about that in the book. You know, you don't burn out yourself. You don't say, okay, I have to have 50 reviews the first month that the book is out. That's not really it. You pace yourself out so that over the 10-year period that you have that book out there to the public or whatever, that you're getting reviews throughout that whole time, not just the first month. So it's really important to pace out your marketing plan in a comfortable way so that you can not only balance the behind-the-scenes bookkeeping and all that, but that you can still write other products and still put out other things out there. So you have to do it in a nice, balanced way.
You have shared so much with us. We are coming down to our last 3 minutes, and this has probably about almost 20 more questions. I said about 15 more questions I was going to ask you, but I definitely don't have the time to get to them all. This time flew by, and you shared so much. I so appreciate it. I wanted to ask you very, very briefly, are you on any social networks? And if so, can you let our off-the-shelf listeners know where they can find you on social networks?
Mm-hmm. You know, I have listed on the consciousdiscussions.blogspot.com. I have listed there about 4 or 5 or 6 different social networking sites that I tend to frequent most often. I have signed up to probably, a dozen or more, but over the years I've probably refined it down to about 4 that I hang out at the most, and those would be LinkedIn, FriendFeed, Twitter, MySpace would be the 4 that I tend to hang out at the most. So you can see links to all of that at consciousdiscussions.blogspot.com.
Wow. We have been talking to Lillian Lillian Brummett, and I got to tell you, she what a blessing that she was. It was like talking to a friend, and the time, the hour has just wrapped itself up. It is gone. So I encourage you, those of you who might have come into the interview halfway through or late, to go back when it archives and listen to the full interview. She shared so much. And to go over to her website, www.brummett.ca, and you can pick up a copy of her book, Trash Talk, where she shared two valuable tips with us on what each of us can do, simple things to help restore the environment. Her book, A Poetry Towards Understanding, and her marketing book, and she knows what she's talking about. She's owned her own businesses in and outside of writing. Purple Snowflake Marketing, which I am going to go get a copy of myself. So I want to thank Lillian for being here with us today on Off the Shelf, and I encourage you to come back next Saturday, same time here at Off the Shelf, 11 o'clock in the morning, where we'll be bringing you other authors and writers and editors and publishers and publicists, movers and shakers in the book industry that can help you launch your career or strengthen your career as you continue to move forward, or even land a first-time publisher, publish your first article or your first book. So thank you to Lillian. Thank you to each of you. And as I always tell you, and I sincerely mean this, do remember, despite the things that are happening around you or the situation you might be in right now, that you are so incredibly valued and so truly blessed. And you have so, so much to offer. Whatever you're feeling or thinking or situation you're going through, remember that, because that is absolutely the truth. I thank you again for being here with us today. Please go and visit Lillian online at brummett.ca, and visit me online at chistel.com, and pick up a copy of my latest book, Long Walk Up. You can read excerpts from each of the books there at the website. And see you again next Saturday. Go out and create a beautiful day for yourself. Be blessed. Lillian, I'll shoot you an email.